This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Two big deals for local drug companies, one involving the multinational GlaxoSmithKline. The other concerns the homegrown Furex Corporation. Meanwhile, Morrisville's Vestique Holdings, a much smaller pharmaceutical company, is filing for bankruptcy. But their marketing strategy is working in other places. We'll find out more with Jason DeBruin, who is a reporter for the Triangle Business Journal. He's been keeping an eye on these stories. Welcome back, Jason.
Hey, thanks for having me. Always glad to join you.
Yeah, tell us more about this GlaxoSmithKline Novartis deal. What's going on?
So this is sort of a trend that we've seen a lot of here in the past few weeks or so, where companies are kind of doubling down on what they do best and sort of shedding what they don't do best. For GlaxoSmithKline, that means that they're shedding some of their oncology business, their cancer drugs. They have a pipeline of drugs that they're developing to treat various cancers, but it hadn't really been a focus of theirs. And conversely, Novartis is very strong in cancers. And so what GlaxoSmithKline said was, hey, we'll sell you our cancer business unit. You get our drugs that are on the market. You get our drugs that are under development. You can probably do a better job with those. Conversely, we'll buy back your vaccine business. Similar situation for Novartis. You know, they have various vaccines, but weren't really a profitable business segment. Conversely, GSK has a much larger vaccine business segment. And so by taking on what Novartis was shedding, they can hopefully see a 1+1=3 on the vaccine side.
Is the vaccine versus oncology drugs, is one a longer pipeline than the other?
Oh, absolutely. The oncology pipeline is typically much longer. And you've probably heard that it takes drug developers a very long time to develop these new drugs. They have to do all kinds of tests first, preclinical and in labs and in animals, and then after that in humans. This can take upwards of 10, 12 years, cost hundreds of millions of dollars even. On the oncology side, it's typically those that are on the longer end of the scale. Those typically take more money, require more trials, end up costing a whole lot more money. Conversely, the vaccines, they don't take quite as long. Now, what's interesting is, of course, those oncology drugs, they come with a much higher margin. So even though it costs you a whole lot more up front, whenever you do have one that passes muster and is approved by the FDA, you can sell it at a much higher margin. Conversely, vaccines, you might have a larger, you know, larger market share, but they come at a much smaller margin.
So there you go. So if you're a business and you're weighing risk versus reward, you'd like to know that you have a better infrastructure. If you're going to take a greater risk for a greater reward, better we should have a bigger roadway, a better way of doing it.
Yeah, that. Absolutely. And so there's, in drug development, you have a lot of these eureka moments where, let's say you're working on a treatment for one type of breast cancer. Well, you're doing that and your neighbors down the hall, your other scientists down the hall, your colleagues are working on a different kind of breast cancer, a treatment for a different kind of breast cancer. And all of a sudden, they meet each other at lunch and they say, hey, well, here's some of what we're seeing. And they say, oh, hey, we're seeing something similar. And maybe those two compounds combined, even though they were doing okay, combined, they can actually do an even better job. Well, if my research is being done at Glaxo and your research is being done at Novartis, those scientists are never going to have lunch together, right? So you're never going to have that eureka moment. Whereas if you have more compounds sort of in your own pipeline, there's a higher likelihood of that eureka moment happening.
All right. So from a business standpoint, that kind of makes sense. It does sound to my ear like it might be an illegal combination in restraint of trade, as the legislation says.
That's right. And certainly we should be clear that that this deal is not going to close until at least 2015. And there are absolutely some regulatory hurdles that need to be cleared, not only, you know, from the FDA and that side of things, but certainly also from the FTC. You know, you mentioned that certainly if one of the companies gains too large of a market share, you have a monopoly potential there. But yeah, that's something that the FTC and a whole host of other regulators are going to look at first.
So you said 2015 at the earliest.
Mid-2015 at the earliest. That's what we're looking at right now. Yeah.
Right. What does that mean for Glaxo and in terms of the local economy?
Well, that's a great question. And that's something that we're not really going to know probably for some time yet. However, just by looking at what Glaxo sold and what they're acquiring and sort of what they're doing, you can sort of infer some things. So for example, a lot of the oncology work that Glaxo did happened out of their Philadelphia offices. They're, of course, based in London. Their North American headquarters are here in RTP, but they also employ about 5,000 people in Philadelphia. Now, a lot of their oncology work was what was being done in Philadelphia. Conversely, GSK has said that it's obviously going to double down on vaccine, also going to double down on a lot of their respiratory products. You probably know that they have an enormous manufacturing facility in Zebulon, and they like to say that pretty much every single one of their respiratory products, sort of across the line, that includes Advair, but also say even like the Breathe Right strips that GSK has, they at some point or another pass through the Zebulon facility. So if that's an area that they want to double down on, we're thinking that that probably is good for our local area.
All right. Well, let's move on to another company, a company known as Furiex, which was really a homegrown corporation, unlike Glaxo.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, you might know the name Fred Eshelman. He's sort of been a pretty successful businessman in the pharmaceutical industry here locally. Years ago, back in the 80s, he started a company that ended up being called PPD. It's a contract research organization, and it's one of these companies that runs the trials for these drug developers. Anyways, a couple of years ago, he sold that for $3.9 billion, sold the company for $3.9 billion. Of course, he had taken on investors at that point, but he personally made $270 million off that deal, so a pretty nice penny. With some of that money, he had already started this company called Furiex Pharmaceuticals, and it's working on an IBS drug. And about
IBS is?
Irritable bowel syndrome.
Ah.
So one of these gastrointestinal diseases that maybe isn't nice to talk about, but you certainly want to have a drug that works if you right. suffer from it. So they had gotten some really good test results back about 3-4 months ago, and all of a sudden at that point became a pretty nice takeover candidate. Their stock shot through the roof. And anyways, yeah, as you mentioned, about a couple weeks ago, it was announced that Forest Labs, which is based out of New York and has a pretty good GI portfolio, they offered to buy Furiex for a deal that could be worth $1.5 or about $1.46 billion. So another nice win for Fred. He's probably going to make close to $350 million in that deal.
Not bad. Now, what does that mean for the local economy?
That is another good question. So hopefully Fred will stay here. He's already been a pretty big local philanthropist. If you are familiar with UNC Chapel Hill, you might know that their School of Pharmacy has now been named the Eshelman School of Pharmacy. Same guy, Fred Eshelman, obviously, thanks in part to a pretty hefty donation that he made to the school. He has been involved locally with other companies. He serves on the board of directors for other pharmaceutical companies. But primarily what it could mean locally that's most important is that we have, as I'm sure you know, a lot of drug development companies here locally that are relatively small. Certainly we have the GSKs, but we also have a number of small ones that are in and around RTP. As we talked about earlier, it costs a lot of money to bring a drug to market. Even before that, it just takes a lot of money to develop a drug. And if there's a guy like Fred that can take his money, invest it in these companies, certainly he benefits, because if these companies do well, of course, then he gets another multiple return. But it's also good for these local companies, because then they become potential takeover candidates for larger drug companies, or even for IPOs and the like. And of course, all that's just good for the local churn in our economy.
And I guess the more he succeeds, the more people watch him in terms of where's Fred putting his money. And
yep.
Becomes not a bad investment.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that's also pretty interesting, you know, we compare ourselves to the Boston area and to the Silicon Valley area oftentimes, and certainly we are right up there in terms of smart scientists and smart research. However, they far exceed us in terms of venture capital and in terms of investment dollars that are made in those pharmaceutical companies. So hopefully if there's a guy who can make some investments into some of these local companies, maybe that'll help us not only catch up, but then also draw the attention of some of those outside venture capital groups, and maybe they'll start giving companies here in the RTP area a second look.
So you talked about the cost of bringing a drug to market, and once you do, then there's the cost of actually convincing the market they need the drug. And that brings us to Vestique Holdings in Morrisville, which declared bankruptcy.
That's right, yeah. And so it's kind of a funny thing to think about. You know, we have these great researchers either in drug companies or even in universities, and they focus all of their attention and all of their energy on developing these drugs, you know, tweaking them, tweaking the chemistry, tweaking the biology, testing it in humans, testing it in animals, doing all kinds of great things for years and years and years. Well, they finally come up with a compound or a treatment or a pill, and it works great, but they haven't really thought much about, well, now I have to sell it. And so it's sort of an interesting dichotomy that you're seeing in the pharmaceutical industry. That's where companies like this Vestique would come along, and they would say, hey, drug company X, whoever, you know, pick your favorite one, you have this drug that's either about to be approved or has already been approved. but it seems that you really haven't given much thought to the marketing of that drug. How about you do this? How about you license it to us? We'll form some sort of a partnership. We'll do all the marketing for it. We have this network of Salesforce representatives that have relationships with doctors, that have relationships with insurance companies. Let us market your drug and we'll sell it. We'll take a cut. You take a cut. And that way we can both benefit.
What happened to Vestique?
It just didn't do it well enough, I suppose. There are still some questions. The bankruptcy was announced just recently. Unfortunately, the executives have not talked to me yet, so I'm still have some questions out there. But what it comes down to is they obviously just weren't able to market the drugs well enough.
Is there – you know, you talked about doctors, and I think we're well aware of the way marketing works with doctors and physicians and other medical personnel, and sometimes it's controversial. But you also mentioned insurance companies. Where do they fit into the marketing picture?
This is an often maybe ignored or maybe not often talked about segment, and it's something that actually probably needs a little bit more light shined on it, because the insurance companies, as you probably know, pay a much larger percentage of the total cost of the drug. So for example, you go to the pharmacy, your doctor writes you a prescription, you go to the pharmacy and you pick up your blood pressure medicine. Well, your copay is maybe $10 or $20, but your insurance company is paying a much larger percentage of that cost, right? So what drug companies do is, in order to encourage, to incentivize you, the consumer, to purchase blood pressure drug A over blood pressure drug B, they assign it a copay. So if your copay is $10 versus a copay of $50, you're obviously more likely to choose the $10 one. Well, these drug companies, of course, know that. And it's, of course, far more beneficial for them to be slotted in that $10 copay as opposed to that $50 copay. So what's happening now earlier and earlier in the process of drug development is these drug companies are hiring companies to encourage insurance companies to slot them in the lower tiers.
Jason, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Jason DeBruin, a reporter for the Triangle Business Journal. Just ahead, moms get the microphone to tell their story on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.